Well, it's Friday, and you know who I am, and I know who you are. You're the one that I have known from before you were born. There's a Rumi phrase. It says, let us drink the wine that existed before the grapes were grown. And the idea is that we all remember home. We remember where we came from. And I always feel that whenever you share faith, whenever you have a conversation about faith, whether it's Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or Jewish, but if you're talking about faith and if you're sharing with somebody else, you're meeting a fellow traveller, you're meeting somebody who also has in themselves this memory of heaven. Because heaven, it's not a place that you just go to in chronological time. If there is a heaven, and I believe there is, a sense of union with God, union with the ground of being, your consciousness absorbed in the complete, compassionate consciousness of the universe. If that place exists, and I believe it does, then it's outside time. And if it's outside time, it's not so much in the future as in the past. Not so much in the past as in the future. It's not in either. And in that sense, it's in both. Because it is the eternal present. It's eternity. Eternity cannot be a place in the future. It has to be a place outside time. And so it's the place from whence we come and to which we will return in due time when this little interval of 70 years is over. And maybe all practice, in all traditions, in all religions, are practices that try and root us in that eternity. All the rituals that we find in any religion are rituals to root us in that eternity. So that we operate a ritual of lighting a candle, of breaking the bread, of sharing the cup, the sacrament, or of doing something in a Buddhist ritual, a visualization. Ringing a bell. No matter what ritual we do in any religion, we're acting out, we're embodying what the heart knows, which is we are living in eternity. We were and we will be. So it defies time. Eternity is the present moment. It's the present moment breaking through, like the clouds have to break before the light comes. It's the eternal dawn. It's the eternal Christmas in an eternal night. It is the light in the darkness. And when I'm doing these podcasts, you know, I feel I'm doing them for myself. I feel that I benefit from sharing. And I feel a huge appreciation for the people who are listening, the person who's listening, the you who is listening. And I feel a sense of affinity, closeness, that if I'm able to speak in this podcast in a personal way, then, and if you're able to listen to it, absorb it, accept it in all its mediocrity, then we must have known each other from eternity, in eternity. And someday we will know each other again there. That's the first thing I want to share with you on this Friday evening of beautiful November weather in Donegal. I just drove home from Letterkenny across the mountain and the bog around what they say the back of Errigal. And there's sometimes it's so dry that, you know, the roads are dry. And they look dry, and there's a lovely feeling to it. It feels wintry sometimes when it's dry. And cold, because it was cold walking around the streets of Letterkenny. And I went in because I'm writing a new book, and I had to take a break about lunchtime and take a few hours just walking around the street, looking at other people to reassure myself that there are other people in the world. Sometimes when you're writing a book and you're on blank pages and you're in the cave, you're on your own. It's like you can sometimes fall into the cosmos that you've invented, the imagined world of your writing becomes more real than the ordinary world out there, and that's not a good space to be, because it can exhaust you. So one of the great tricks about writing is don't overdo it. You know, if you do 2 or 3 hours, you've done an awful lot. You've done more than John McGahern would do in a day, because he used to say that he couldn't write more than maybe an hour a day. But I guess he was writing at a very intense level. I could write 3 hours, but then I have to go for a walk sometimes. Walk along the beach at Mahara Rorte. But other times I actually have to go into a town, whether it's Dunloe or Letterkenny, and just walk around and have a coffee and go from one shop to another, looking at second-hand suits and speakers for music centres and laptops and all the beautiful electrical equipment that I desire. And then I feel relaxed and I come home and I can start again. So when I was on the way home, I was having these ideas. And even though I've already done the podcast for today, and it's up on the website, I had this urge to say another few words, to share another few ideas with you, just about how you can have a huge connection with somebody when you have faith. And how it's like that's the key to these podcasts. And it's also like, you know, I'm trying to write a book. I'm always trying to find new ways, new language, new sentences to shape my experience. But I suppose what I worry about is how beautiful faith can be. If you find your faith really unspeakably beautiful, it's difficult to talk about it. And so there's sometimes when I'm doing the podcast and I worry, because I think the language doesn't contain the reality of what I'm feeling. The language may sound too intense, or too focused, or too unfocused, or too cliched. You just worry about the language you use as a writer. And podcasting for me is writing. I'm storytelling in the podcast. I'm telling a story of my life. So I think about the words I use in a podcast the same as if I was writing a book or a column. And this week, what I wanted to do in the podcast was continue speaking about Ballyvourney. Ballyvourney was an amazing experience last weekend. And I actually did the podcast from the place I was staying last weekend in Ballyvourney. But before I left, I met the great musician, Padraig O'Riordan, and he gave me 4 or 5 of his CDs, music that he composed. And I didn't realise until I got home that all the music he gave me was church music, you know. I didn't realise that he's been working with the choir in Coolay, the choir that his father began. Padraig has been working with them now for 50 years. And he has opened up a space, I think, of liturgical music. Liturgical music that's like nothing else on earth, because he connects into the early Irish church and he connects into the visceral poetic power of the language in the early Irish church. And what he puts together is truly sacred music. And I use a little bit of it in the background. I used 1 or 2 tracks where, you know, they're singing in church, and I just use it in the background. And I get so enthusiastic sometimes talking about the Christian stories that I also worry maybe I'm excluding you if you're not Christian. And it would be so important for me to, you know, to say that my experience of being Christian, or if I get a good buzz from a Christian idea or a Christian practice, it's no different than any other practice, Buddhist or Jewish or Hindu. And you might be in a zone where you don't use any practice, and that could be just as good as well. Always, I keep going back to the Heart Sutra in Buddhist texts. The Heart Sutra ultimately in the end says that the ultimate teaching is there is no teaching. And it's a powerful insight to keep in your heart when you're doing religious practice. In fact, to me, there's a strange way that it's an insight that opens the door into the practice. That you always remember, if you're, supposing you're going to church mass, supposing you're going to the mosque, supposing you're saying private prayers or doing Buddhist rituals at home in the privacy of your own bedroom, whatever you're doing, whatever you're doing that creates meaning, you know, that invents meaning, that pushes you forward with a sense that your life means something more than just the physical, literal reality that you were born and then you die. Whatever makes a metaphor of your body, a poem of your body. Whatever does it for you, it's really enriching to keep in mind it may not be true. It may not be true. And yet you do it with the intention of it being true, with the belief that it is true. We live as if there is a God. We're not certain of it. And the funny thing is, holding on to the lack of certitude also helps you practice. It gives faith a lightness. You're not clenching your fist round some profound truth, like that has to be true. People who do that in religion sometimes get divided. You know, they find that they're constantly against other people because they're constantly bumping up against other people who don't believe what they believe. You know, if I say I believe in Jesus Christ and the resurrection, and if I have a clenched fist as I say it, and if I have an intellectual idea what I'm talking about when I say it, the likelihood is that I will have a lot of people who disagree with me, and a lot of enemies as well, but just even good people who disagree with me. I will isolate myself as the exceptionalist, that I have the truth and you don't. And the paradox is that for me in my life, I can proclaim that Jesus Christ is the resurrection and the life of the cosmos. I can proclaim that deeply from my heart. And in the next breath, I can look at my fellow humans and say, it may not be true. So believing is a kind of, it's a beautiful, vulnerable thing. And it only exists insofar as you do it. We all have a very clear notion of how to, you know, do the truth in compassion, you know, that you shouldn't just be a hypocrite in church, you should, you know, be helping the poor and be compassionate to people around you and to forgive your enemies. And in some sense, we're quite well aware of that. It's been inculcated into our culture to be forgiving and to be compassionate. But what we miss sometimes is that faith is a vulnerable place. It's not an aggressive, assertive, arrogant place. It's not ground on which you stand and look at the rest of the world and think, you guys are wrong because I know that, you know, Jesus is the resurrection. No. You're on the same ground as everybody else. So that the entire cosmic energy of the Christ and faith in the Christ or Buddha, it all only exists to the extent that you embody it. And that embodiment has its root in two foundations. One is the solitude that you have when you're alone and when you feel the silence inside you is the language of God. That's one foundation. And the other is when you reach out to other people and engage in some kind of ritual. No matter how small, how simple. It might be like yesterday, I went into a church for about 15 minutes. Two or three other people were in the building at the time. that was a very minimal, small experience of being in the church. Sometimes at the end of that, I might light a candle. And yet those are profound rituals where I am standing with other humans, with the same faith and the same vulnerability. And even the fact that that works for me doesn't mean that I hold on to that truth as absolute, because I acknowledge that in Buddhism, Judaism, Hindu and Islam, people are doing the same. We are all making music to the God who is the ground of all our being. And we're all one. So I'm driving home this evening and I'm having these reflections about this evening's podcast. And I couldn't resist sharing them with you, just as a little extra. Sharing what is a reflection about the podcast so that it can lead you into it gently. And that's all I wanted to say. Look forward to talking to you again, and that'll be next week, and thank you for being here. Have a beautiful, wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.